Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We'd love to hear from you. Call us at 646-652-4856. And I can't say this anymore. I used to be on normally every Tuesday at noon, but lately it seems like we have a different time every week. So if you don't catch the show, you can download it on iTunes, do a podcast there. It's a podcast setup. But I'm just like... It's just like the Rolling Stones. You want to get the Rolling Stones, you got iTunes, you download them. You can go to iTunes and download the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. So I'm looking forward to next week. Hopefully I'll have it up. I've got quite a few guys set up to do, but one interview in particular, in fact, I just got his book today, Thinking Tennis for Thinking Players, Chet Murphy. He lives down toward the Alabama line here in Georgia now. He lived for many years in California, Colorado. He's 97 years old. I had a great interview with him the other day. Hopefully I can get him to call in, but I'm going to play a recorded interview of him coming up soon. So please stay tuned and listen for that. Let me jump right back. I'll tell you what, I'm going to jump right onto the 78-foot soapbox. I've got a good show tonight. Hopefully I've got Coach Creasy calling in. Hopefully he can hear me, and hopefully the mic's working and everything. I had a little short time. Went down to the Georgia Tech match. Okay? Tech match. Here it is. Let me play at the last. Serving. Enjoyed watching it, enjoyed going down there. But I got to say, ever since I've known Kenny Thorne, I've felt like he's a class act. And I also want to say, I want to put a special congratulations out there to a very special lady, Patricia Jensen. She comes every home match, puts together a ball boy crew. My son is part of the ball boy crew. And she does. Every school should do that. If they don't do that, shame on them. They should do that. And when Coach Creasy comes on here, I'll tell him, I know he's got a lot of work. You ought to get somebody else. Somebody in Charleston would be willing to do that. Put them out there, at least for the number one singles. It's a great opportunity for the kids to see, great opportunity for the kids to learn, and a class Georgia Tech team tonight. They won and they lost in a 4-3 match, but when it was over, it's tough. About 20, 25 minutes later, these kids, my son in particular, ball boyed for 3 full matches, and then the Georgia Tech players come out, and they hit, 2 of them come out, the number one player, Rick Rackett, the Rackett kid, and then the Eubanks kid, the freshman kid, looks awesome, came out and hit with the ball boys after the match was over. That's class. I enjoyed it. I like seeing that. They want to increase spectatorship in tennis. Keep doing stuff like that, and they'll get it. All right, so hopefully tonight I got Coach Creasy on. He'll be on in just a minute. Hopefully he's calling in. And I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll get right into what I saw in the match. Oh, one more thing. I got to get the Tennessee. I'm watching the match. I'm watching the Georgia Tech-Tennessee match, and I'm looking at the bench over there and coaching. And the coaches, of course, they've got the head coach, Sam Winterbotham, I believe his name is. But next to him, coaching, Chris Woodruff, Ben Testerman. I mean, national titles, so many national titles on that bench. It was unbelievable coaching. So I want to get those guys on the show, too. I'm going to take a quick commercial break, come back with Coach Creasy, and this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show.
Chick-fil-A, and you get to eat a lot. And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey folks, this is JP Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602. I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility, windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards, you can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
Little boy in a baseball hat stands in the field with his ball and bat. Says I am the greatest player of them all. Puts his bat on his shoulder and he tosses up his ball. And the ball goes up and the ball comes down. Swings his bat all the way around. The world's so still you can hear the sound. The baseball falls to the ground. Now the little boy doesn't say a word. Picks up his ball. He is undeterred. Says I am the greatest there has ever been. And he grits his teeth and he tries it again. And the ball goes up and the ball comes down. Swings his bat all the way around. The world's so still you can hear the sound. The baseball falls the ground. He makes no excuses. He shows no fear. He just closes his eyes and listens to the cheers. Little boy, he adjusts his hat, picks up his ball, stares at his bat. Says I am the greatest. The game is on the line. And he gives his all.
All right, we're back here at the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. I'd like you to call in. The Yellow Ball Hotline number is 646-652-4856. I believe I have on the line here with me the never sleeping, never tired Coach Chuck Creasy. Coach, how are you?
Hey, Jake. I'm okay, man.
Well, I know I'm intro and a
I think
lot
I'm worn out on this. I'm worn out on this topic, though. We sure could be addressing other issues than this for the past 20 years.
Well, true, but it's here, and I'm looking forward to. You did a show last week on your show, American Tennis, and you enumerated, and I asked you to come on here tonight, some of the reasons that you feel, and I think you've got exactly 14 reasons you feel that no ad is a no-go. So we've got a little less than an hour left now, so I'd love to get you to go through those and let's discuss them. I went tonight, watched another match. It was a good match. Georgia Tech played, most of the people when I walked in greeted me. Doubles, I thought I'd get there in time, but doubles was over in about 20 minutes again. And Tennessee won the doubles point. And then we got into the singles, and it just, unless you're really paying attention, it goes away quick. So perhaps it does draw you in, the three all point. You got to look for them, because if you don't catch them, they're gone pretty quick. So... I'll let you go ahead and try to. What I'd like you to go ahead and do is just start a little bit. Let's talk about the first five or so. First five,
okay.
Or maybe seven, and talk about why no ad is a no go.
Well, you saw it tonight, and were you thrilled out of your britches? I mean, were you thrilled to the place where you just said, "Wow, this I'm going to go every time to watch this"? I think not. Probably, I think you were. Probably confused, or anybody's confused by this, and even if it was the best thing since sliced bread, JP, couldn't they just do a simple TV format if that was the real reason, or they could do an abbreviated format if that was the real reason for that, just not mess. Number one reason, it's our history and our heritage, and I believe in many, 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 and listen, the majority of the players, according to the last NCAA poll, believe that it is something very worth preserving and protecting, our scoring system. It is the complete difference. The depth of it is chess versus checkers, and we shouldn't be dumbing it down, but that's number one. But let's go ahead and get to a few of the things that people don't see on the outside. I mean, that should be enough to convince people to, protect the scoring system. And by the way, scoring system is not the same as format. Neither myself nor many, many people who are trying to protect the game of tennis would be against a different format. I think our format is not the best thing in the world, but the scoring system is what we're trying to preserve. But let's go ahead. Do you understand, and does most people out there understand, that three all point, or that 40-40 point is worth two games? It's not just one game. It's worth two games. And everybody understands that.
Okay. You've told me that a lot of times, and I need you to explain it for Gomer Pyle so that he can understand it, because I'm not quite sure I get it. I get the sentiment, but I need to understand what you mean by that.
Well, everybody understands that when the score is 4-2, on one point the score either becomes 5-2 or 4-3, and people say, wow, it's a two-game switch. No, it's a two-game switch on every game. If it's the first game of the match and you get a net court, or you get a lucky shot, or you bomb a serve, or if you cheat me, which happens all the time with this no-ad scoring, it's worth two games. It's the game that you have and the game I should have had. In other words, you're up 1-0. It's going to take me two games now to win two games to get back up that one game that I should have been ahead. See, tennis is – I don't want to get too deep into this, but tennis is one of the only games – it's like boxing, and the beautiful thing is simultaneously changes from offense to defense to offense to defense. Back and forth, back and forth. It's the only sport like that. Think about basketball, football, baseball, anything else. You're playing completely offensive or you're playing completely defensive. But tennis, the minute the ball crosses over the net, you go from offense to completely being on defense, back to offense, back to defense. It's a game of, it has double, you know, it's double, what should I say, it's plus one, minus one on every situation. And you teach kids that too, especially on unforced errors. Unforced errors are really worth 2 points, not one, because it's the point I should have had and the point you have now. Earned or forced errors, when you force an error or when you earn the point, it's more of a progression of one, but everything else is, you know, double the impact. So most people don't understand that, but the cheating is unbelievable, and this just makes it very, very hard to handle. You know, the brilliant people who came up with the scoring system, I think, understood that, and that's why the deuce ad is so important for a person, and it has more implications. So let's go on to number two, JP. This is the thing that bothers me a lot, is that it promotes parity without skill set. And that what that means is that immediately people have an opportunity to win where they might not have had. A good friend of mine said it this way. He says, within the first four games, we'll have a war zone coach. This tennis player said this. And in that war zone, I'll have three or four deuces in a row, and I break the player down, and then it's easy to win 2-1 or 2-0. But he says, with no ad scoring, you do not. It basically promotes parity, where a person only has to win 1 point to get ahead. They don't have to lock in their lead. And so some people are for immediate parity, and some of these teams, the politics of this thing, you've got to understand, these teams up north, some of them, that really are good ball strikers indoor, but they maybe are not as tough as the kids in the south that grind it out and the kids who can construct points. They basically love the no ad because it allows them, it promotes parity, which would not be there otherwise. So there's a big difference between ball striking and point playing. And no ad promotes ball striking, but it does not promote point playing, and you've got to be able to do that. So that's two. You want me to go on, or you want to?
With that one, okay, on that one, playing it. Why is there, for example, you're saying that it's more parity, but look, I got it, you got it, the wind, you know, just like wind, help me understand. You know, I got the win, you got the win. You know, I got the sun, you got the sun. So we're both having to deal with it. Why do you feel like it creates that type of parity?
Well, JP, anybody, look, our sport is based on threes. If you don't win the first point of the game, you have to either win three in a row or 4 out of 5 points to win the game. The key to being good at tennis at the highest level is your ability to get what we call conversions, which are 3 points in a row. Now, in no ad scoring, you only have to win 1 point in a row. And if I'm the underdog and you're the favorite, it's very easy for me to win 1 point in a row. It's a little harder to win two in a row. And then to win three in a row is incredibly hard, especially game after game. Now here's the point also. This is something that people don't quite understand. They all see this, but I don't think they've labeled it. But with momentum control tactics, with about momentum, everybody plays good for a while when you're behind. And then when you're behind, everybody plays good. The player is comfortable leading, plays okay or better when they are tied. But only the favorite player is comfortable playing well with the lead. Most people will choke up the ad games all the time. They don't know how to convert games. The critical thing in winning in tennis, the beautiful thing, is not getting a lead, but it's being able to convert the game that you have, the ad games. And that's what my friend, who's a very good player, was talking about recently. He said that once we have a long war zone, a 10, 12, or 14-point game, he said, and the other player is denied a couple times, they basically are not comfortable winning 2 points in a row at the end of the game, and they go away. So you break a person mentally with regular scoring. With no ad scoring, a person does not break as easily mentally. Actually, they never have to go to the depth of the mental toughness that it takes in playing those long, long war zones. So war zone endurance is one of the war zone endurance is what I call it. It NOAAD never promotes the war zone skill set, the war zone endurance. So that's number three or four, I believe. War zone endurance.
Hang on a second. Let me see if I can grab a caller here. Caller 479, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Would you like, do you have a question or a comment for Coach at all?
Yeah, it's very interesting stuff. I totally understand what he's talking about. I'm a big proponent of the regular scoring, and it totally makes sense what he's saying. You know, there's so much more mental toughness involved in the regular scoring opposed to the no ad. I mean, I couldn't disagree with anything he said so far. I mean, I like it.
Caller, I'm curious. Do you see it? Do you, Coach Creasy made a point. He said it's something that's sometimes hard to see, that you don't quite, you know, if you're just looking at things on the surface, you might not see it. But if you look deeper, he's saying to look deeper. And do you see it the same way as Coach Creasy was trying to say? Did you catch that part of it?
No, I just joined in about 5 minutes ago, JP. I think I missed that part. Sorry about that.
No, it's excellent. I don't know, Coach Creasy, if you were able to quite get him there, but what he's trying to say there is, and I'll hold your own caller if you're there, Coach. He's agreeing with you that you're just not. I don't know why it's not. It is obvious to some people that you're having to stay tough.
JP, the reason that our sport is so addicting are the depth of the scoring system is just beautiful. Like, I want to make a comment here that most people don't think about, but when you're playing NOAAD scoring, if you're ahead 30 love, you basically have 16-1 odds of having a game point. Now, think about this. It's 1 over 2 times 1 over 2 times 1 over 2 times 1 over 2. If you win any one of the next 4 points, you have a game point, all right? If you're up 30-15, you have an 8-1 odds, 1 over 2 times 1 over 2 times 1 over 2, if you win any one of the next 3 points. Now, you would think that with those odds, 16-1 or 8-1 odds, which both of them, you have to have one or the other, that you would never lose one of those games. But because of that sudden death point and because of it counting for two games, it immediately swings the momentum back and forth without really a skill set that it takes. The key skill set that it takes to be good in tennis is your ability to carry leads. And ultimately, you have to be able to play well from the front. Most people, everybody plays well from behind if they have equal skill set. The critical thing and what makes this such a beautiful pecking order sport is that only the favored player is comfortable in the end running forward with the lead or carrying the lead. And we see that all the time, the players throw away leads. It's just one of the critical skill sets. So that's number five, about the random momentum swings. And then number six, NOAAD is really simplistic if you look at it. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, if you look at the regular scoring system of tennis, you are always in one of seven positions. You're either tied, one ahead, two ahead, or three ahead, one behind, two behind, or three behind. You're always in one of those seven positions. Now, you might, in the NOAAD scoring, you only have between 4 and 7 points that you get to play per game. You have a minimum of 4, maximum of 7. So I would argue that it is very similar to what the shot clock has done in basketball. A lot of people like the shot clock in basketball. Growing up in Indiana and not having a shot clock, I don't like the shot clock. But let me make the reason why. In basketball, you used to have 50 different skill sets or different momentum swings based on the clock being at different variables. Now basketball, you come down, they either try to take it inside or they get back around, pass it around the perimeter, and they have to get a shot off. You can imagine how dumbed down our game would be if they said, instead of the scoring system, they would say, listen, you've got to score within six rallies or you cannot win this point. I mean, we basically have done that with the score. We're saying that you have to end the point within 7 points. So, you know, not understanding the switching of the momentum there and things is critical. So that's number six. You told me to get through these quickly. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you. You're not saying let's go back to four corners, Dean Smith, in a rest in peace.
You know what, JP? It's pathetic. Think about this. There's no anybody that's been a basketball player understands that the minute you started to stall, that you would lose your momentum and you lose the game. In tennis, everybody knows that the minute you start to push when you're ahead, or you don't go after the win, if you start to play conservative, the momentum switches and you cannot win. You have to keep continuously trying to force errors. In basketball, it's pathetic that Dean Smith was such a mastermind that he came up with his four corners, and all of the opponents of Dean Smith said, look, the four corners is too good. Let's make a rule against it. Basically, some of these Ivy League coaches up north and some of the northern teams that play all indoors, they basically have said, look, we don't have a skill set of constructing points and getting deep into the points, so let's make a scoring system that brings immediate parity. I want to make a point, political point here. Only twice in the history of NCAA tennis, has an Ivy League team made the final 16. This last year, Columbia made a great run, and they continued to do that. And then years ago, Harvard did once, and Princeton did once. And correct me up there if I'm not telling you the exact truth on that. But the bottom line is, who does this benefit? This benefits the teams that cannot basically construct points and they cannot do the skill sets needed to win with regular scoring. You know, so I'm arguing that Dean Smith basically was brilliant. He came up with a perfect offensive stall. The four corners was unbeatable, and everybody changed the rules. So basically that's what we're doing now, JP. So, anyway, I gave you number six there. Go ahead.
Let me grab another caller here real quick. Caller 269, do you have a comment for Coach Creasy? He's talking about the points he has for no ed, or actually the points he has as being no ed is a no go. What you have any thoughts?
Well, good evening, Coach. It's Tom Walker. How are you doing?
Hey, Tom. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks.
I was listening, but you know, Coach, I'm gonna take you off task here a little bit. And, you know, I was doing some research here recently, and the thing that we've come up with, and I think we agree that the reason for the scoring change and the reason for a lot of this is supposedly for college tennis to get on TV, and it's supposed to increase the visibility of the sport and the support of it. Is that the intent?
That's what that's the narrative that they have pushed forward, Tom. I don't believe that is the real reason,
okay,
but that's what they've pushed.
All right, because what I'm going to suppose is, in going back and looking at some numbers, how about we just do what we should do? We're seeing a dwindling of U.S. players and juniors. We're seeing a decrease in the number of kids playing. And I tell you what, I've been looking at it now for several weeks. And, you know, Coach, I'm going to throw out something really controversial, but forgive me. I think it's time to get Americans back into college tennis, to remove the heavy foreign element that is now there, and to start earmarking scholarships for American players instead of coaches doing nothing but recruiting foreign athletes, giving foreign scholarships predominantly to foreign players.
We need
the numbers
more
are staggering.
People to speak out.
the numbers
we need,
are...
We need... I'm sorry to interrupt there, Tom. I'm complete agreement. The numbers are staggering. I have all the statistics. It's over 65%.
It's closer to 70, because if what you'll do is if you go back and look at the schools, not just look at the roster spots, but look at the actual kids that are playing inside the top 10, it's nearly 70% foreign. When you get down into 20 to 30, teams ranked 20 to 30, it goes up. Division II is nearly 90% foreign athletes receiving foreign scholarships. And there are teams after teams that we can say, major teams, that there's not one single American in the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Pathetic.
And the issue is, again, nothing wrong with foreign players. I have no problem with that. But the fact is that we're no longer producing players. We're just simply recruiting them. Now, the argument could be said that, oh, well, they're boasting or they're boosting our level. But the fact is, at what point do we become swamped? At what point do we support the world to the point that the educational opportunities are going away? Looking at other sports, baseball, nearly 10% of the kids that play high school baseball will get some form of a scholarship in college. Tennis is less than 1%. Less than 1% of the high school kids that play tennis will receive some kind of some sort of scholarship or some kind of financial aid. Those statistics are shocking. Tennis is by far, at more than a ratio of 2 and 3 to 1, more foreign than any other sport being played on the college campuses in the United States. And it's time we start taking a look at this, and the college coaches need to be held accountable in the universities as well.
Bravo, Tom. Tom and JP and everybody listening out here, now listen about this statistic. Nobody even speaks about this, but on the women's side, you remember Title IX was not set up to protect women from all the other countries of the world. It was set up to protect girls, my daughter, your daughters, and women from the United States of America. But the sad thing is that, it is over 65% of the women, female scholarships are going to international women. And one of the sports that this new deal to pay athletes, I don't want to talk about this too much, but it's a very controversial thing now. And I think we're not supposed to talk about it too much. But the bottom line on the thing is tennis was not, Title IX was not set up to protect women from other countries. And Title IX and the a very good rule, very poorly implemented, and was never supposed to demolish men's sports. And then what you say is true, Division II is about 90%. International students, and you know, and these are things that have not been addressed by our leadership, by the ITA. I am appalled that they would come out and say, well, now we're going to save college tennis by taking apart its most precious heirloom, that's the scoring system, and we're going to do this no ad, and we're going to try to make an exciting format. Bottom line, teams are dropped because it's easy to drop a team that has all international students. No, there's no parents to complain, so it makes it a real easy deal to drop. So you're right on the market. You're right on the mark.
And I'll leave you with one final thought here. I was looking at this, and I called and spoke to a president of a university that I knew quite well, and was speaking to him about this, and you know, the thought was, well, what if the NCAA came out with a division with a ruling or finding that said, okay, 25% could go foreign aid, but then the earmark 75% needs to be American students. What would actually happen? And he said, well, basically nothing. That the colleges would support something like that, but the coaches themselves at this point are so tapped into, they have to win. So to be competitive, they're flying around the world trying to find the best athletes that they can. He said it's so bad. He said it at his school, and I'm not going to give the name of the school, he says, we just hired a foreign coach. He said the reason we hired a foreign coach was we couldn't find an American coach that could get us foreign athletes, that could make us competitive. So now we're hiring foreign coaches just as recruiters to go find foreign players to bring in the United States and not giving those opportunities to American kids. Now, I found it very interesting in looking at some USGA golf statistics for kids that are playing college or playing competitive golf tournaments. Now, again, I can't, you know, speak that these statistics are right, but the United States Golf Association is claiming that nearly 50% of the kids that play tournament-level golf that are going around the United States like our kids do for tennis, nearly 50% of those kids active are going to receive some form of golf scholarship in college. That's shocking because I can tell you firsthand, really good players that are playing national-level tennis in the United States are not even getting a whiff. And
that's right.
And not be able to continue on in the game. Many who would like to, and the last bastion of this, of course, is in Division III, where there is no scholarship money involved. So I'll head on out, Coach. I think you do great work, and you know, whatever we can do to try to bring back you know, opportunities for American kids, I think would really grow the college game again in the United States and also add a lot more junior tennis players into a sport that has more opportunity.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. All right, Coach, yeah. Let me take another real quick commercial break, come right back, and I want to get back on your points. And we'll be right back with We Coach Tennis Radio Show.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Here on the Yellow Ball.
Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hey, come play the Marietta Grand Prix. It's a lot of fun. You get to play a lot of tennis, and we have Chick-fil-A sandwiches from Chick-fil-A. And you get to eat a lot. And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey folks, this is J.P. Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602. Radio show. I hit the jack to no ad scoring. I've got on tonight Coach Chuck Creasy. He's given us his 14 reasons no ad is a no go. I personally can't stand it. But before I do that, I want to go back on the foreign player thing, Coach. We talk about the foreign athletes and how they've taken it up. And you know, there's a loss of players, and there's a couple of different big reasons. But one thing I am particularly interested in, and I want to get back. I definitely want to make this show's about the 14 reasons, but I want to get your reaction to this. What is the actual pressure that a coach feels in college tennis? I don't think it's there to win any more than it might be there to win their own pride or their own ego or this or that. But you're taking a lot of lumps now, right now at the Citadel. And I've seen, you've been back here, you've been back to Atlanta a few times with the team. A year ago you were through here, and I couldn't see a team. Not the way I saw a team this year. You came back, and you're building a team. Why do more coaches not want to take that road, the long road?
Well, JP, you've asked a good question, and Tom Walker brought up a very, very good point. He's right on the button with what we need to address. And I wanted to say, first of all, if we did have David Benjamin from the ITA continues to say that they asked years ago what would happen if we had a rule against it, and he thought it would be a lawsuit. And I always said, well, who's going to sue? The kid who from some other country? No. His parents? No. The athletic director? No. The coach? No. Nobody's going to. They've made a rule in junior college to just allows two per team in every country in the world. That is the formula. They have two internationals per team. And I'll be the first one to say that there's a lot of great international kids. I've had a few over the years. But they should not dominate 90% of a Division II, and they should not take 65% of our money. Now, you made a good point also, and you've made it very before, that we probably ought to be rewarding those teams that recruit American. The USTA ought to use some of their money and give a big stipend to the best American team out there, and give a coach a big stipend if he does it with American kids, or let's have an all-American team. You know, let's just do it from that angle, and that way nobody will think we're, not being,
But we got a lot of nice guys that coach, college tennis.
We do.
They can't coach a guy that recruits a full roster of foreign players and still doesn't win. He can't coach any.
JP, that's neither here nor there. Look,
they can't coach and they can't recruit. I'm sorry.
JP, look. It is extremely hard. The top 60 American kids are recruited like crazy by every school. But if you're 60 on down in the United States, you've got to compete now against 60 other countries' top 10 players. And it's very easy for me to sit in my office, get an email from some other country. I get them every day. I go delete. And when I get them coming through, but they basically say, Coach, we got this guy. It's number 5 in our country, and he wants to come to America. He has scholarship money. And it's easy for somebody to do that. It just saves money. They don't have to go out and recruit. And let's make this point. If I recruit somebody from the state of South Carolina, I am accountable to make sure to that young man, his parents, and everybody watches the development of that player. It's tremendous pressure. But if I get somebody from South America or somewhere, instead of South Carolina, well, then if the kid doesn't pan out, well, he didn't pan out. But the point is, it's a less pressure to recruit the international students. Now, people can swing that around any way they want to try to justify what they're doing. But in the end, we need to have some type of incentive to recruit American kids first. And that's what we need to do. We have an obligation. This is our training base. Look, I got 3 young ones right now. It's tremendously, even with me coaching them a lot, tennis is tremendously expensive. Now, why should I spend thousands of dollars on them and then they not have a place to go play college tennis? That's killing us right now as far as our numbers. It's not the NOAD scoring versus regular scoring. Give me a break. That is so pathetic that they push forward that narrative, the USTA and the ITA, that it's not exciting. My number eight spot thing was that the drama
okay.
is
are
the...
Are we back on NOAD is a no-go?
Yeah, if you want to. Okay. I mean,
all right, NOAD is a no-go. Let's get back on that. What number, how many of you given us to this point? I've lost.
I think we're through seven. I think there's number eight.
All right, number eight.
Drama is eliminated. Now they push excitement. They say NOAD is exciting. And here's my statement. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence. It's just like riding a roller coaster ride, you know, right? Excitement. The first time it happens, okay. Second time, it's not quite as much. Third time, it's boring. Same thing with NOAD. Look, drama is more important than excitement. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each denial. It is the drama of the long war zone game. Folks call them war zones. The war zone endurance is what we're after in all of our players. And this is the thing that these teams that play predominantly indoors in ball striking, where it serves the nerves and you don't have to construct points. And that's what our kids lack, isn't it? They just basically do not know how to develop points. And so
Coach,
anyhow,
I couldn't agree with you more on this one. This one right here is one that you go to a match, and if you're a spectator, I've done it a couple. This tonight I sat out. You heard at the opening of the show, I played the audio of the final point out there. I'm sitting there, all the three all points. If you know, when they talk about it, when they romance about the excitement part of it, inevitably they will bring up Dan McGill, the red card, holding it up at Georgia in that atmosphere, in that fishbowl kind of there. And they'll point to that. They'll say, look, but here at Georgia Tech, I've watched it behind a glass wall, and I've watched it on the thing. That three-all point comes and goes. And like you said, each time it comes and goes, it becomes less exciting no matter what.
It dwindles in excitement. Now, let me say this real quick here. I don't want to not be able to put this in. But we have an Alfred Hitchcock movie right now as opposed to a slasher movie. Now, come on. The drama, the way Alfred Hitchcock movies were put together, think about it, how the drama intensifies, and it's not. But slasher movies might be scary the first time, and then it becomes laughable. I mean, this excitement thing is a bad argument. Now, let me say this, too. Immediately, what happened when they made NOAD back in the 70s? I was in the room. 36 coaches, ITA fee was $10 a year, by the way. The dues, we had to pay $10 a year instead of $500 a year. And basically, I saw the pitch for NOAD scoring. It was supposed to be a one-year experiment. And what it did was it made immediate parity between about 15 teams. 15 teams were brought into the hunt instead of the four or five that deserved to be the top teams. So what we have now, look at the scores from this last couple weeks with NOAD scoring. We had Penn beating Penn State, that was like 12 in the country. We had Princeton beating Mississippi State. Come on, are you kidding me? Last year we had Elon that beat, Princeton's up to 23 in the country now. How does that happen? Is this a planned agenda? How in the world do you have Elon beating Duke last year without NOAD scoring? It's unbelievable that you can have this immediate parity.
Hang on this one. Now, help me here a little bit. Now, you're saying this, and it's taking a lot of courage for you to say this, because there's somebody on the other end somewhere going, oh, wait a second. Why isn't he praising the Princeton coach? Why isn't he praising the Elon coach?
Look. Okay. All right. There's two ways a player advances in their skill set as far as their rites of passage. when they win a 10-point tiebreaker, do you think they get as much confidence as they do when they win a 7-5 in the third or 7-6 in the third three-hour match? Okay, there's no way. The same thing, these teams that win these matches, these no-add scoring, all of a sudden everything is skewed. Now, you don't really know who the best teams are. People say that's exciting. Now, there's no way in the world that these teams should be winning these matches. Look, the number eight reason, number nine, is that it eliminates conditioning, the fighting, and the ability to work through war zones. But the conditioning has been eliminated as well. You know, it's just – but here's the number 10 point I wanted to get to. As a coach, it eliminates the accurate barometer for people to know where they are. And I'm telling you that these teams do not belong and there's no way in the world if you play – and again, once what I said before, there has to be an agenda. A lot of these teams want – the shortened format. I'd like to play two out of three tiebreakers every match if it was just to see if I could get ranked. I mean, that would be a nice thing to do. And no ad. This is why players hate it as well, JP. Players hate it. You know, we had one of our top players in the country take, he only lost one match in 2 years, the last 2 years, and he lost 2-0 in no ad format indoors. Now tell me how that happens. In no-add format, I had a player one time lose 0-0, then beat the same guy 3-2 2 weeks later. Now this is it's ridiculous, and people might say that happens in regular scoring. Well, not really. You know, it usually there's a pecking order that you have to work through, and that's just part of the thing of tennis. So I think I've been through 10 of them so far. So
it's 10. You got anything, four.
If I can read my writing here, quick fixes will never sustain those true things that we want to build on our sport. That's a huge one.
By the way, I just got a text back. He dropped off on us on the call, but Tom Walker sent me a text and said, wanted me to tell you that all seven starting spots for Mississippi State are foreign.
Okay. All right. Well, anyhow, that match doesn't happen. That doesn't happen if they're playing regular scoring. We have this coach's jobs are on the line, too. That's the thing that you have to understand when they play this thing. They play this abbreviated format. It really has long-term ramifications. But gimmicks will not sustain the excellence nor the depth of the sport. It will not sustain it. We're basically manipulating instead of inspiring kids. You know, we need to inspire kids to love the sport to a much deeper level, and we need to inspire people to love college tennis at a much deeper level. Excitement does not do that. Once again, excitement dwindles with each occurrence. You know, so anyhow... So anything there, you want me to continue to go on? What would you like?
I want to make sure we at least get through the 14, and then I want to come back around and maybe tie it in a bow.
Okay. You know, the rites of passage are in tennis, the rites of passage, which I already alluded to, need to be accurate barometers, really, of how good a player really is. Okay, small differences... in skill set,
get on that.
Become
right.
Go ahead.
Thing, on the right that you're mentioning. I mean, we're changing. If they change baseball, you know, they are tightening up baseball. It's going to go a little quicker, but they're taking off from the time that the guy can step out of the box and scratch his crotch or his butt or whatever, and stick his foot back in and bat. They're not going to two strikes. They're not going to three balls. They're not going to seven innings. And I think that's what NOAAD tends to do. And when they go that route, they need to, from that moment on, they need to put an asterisk beside. When we're going to NOAAD, they need to start putting asterisks beside these play, they're not the same rites of passage. Is that how, I mean, am I seeing it the way you're trying to explain it when you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, they even have wind dated, you know, things for records in track, and there's a difference between indoor and outdoor, and that's a different subject. But basically, we need accurate barometers for our players to know why they went forward and how they went forward. You know, those kids from Princeton, well, maybe you could get the coach on sometime, but I want to know if they really can back this up, and I want to know if they're really, it's their skill set or if it's the scoring system that did this. Because here's number 11, JP, number 11 or 12, I've got them all written down here. But 11 is small differences in skill set advantage become huge differences in the outcome of the match. In other words, if I have a slice backhand and you don't, every tennis player knows that as the match goes on, that becomes a bigger and bigger advantage, and it's a small skill set. No ad scoring because of the fluctuation of the scoring system becoming, the scoring system being more important than that skill set, it really nullifies your playing skill set. So players learn how to manipulate the score more than they do working on their slice backhands. And so that's a really a tragic thing if you're a coach. You know, you really advance. Number 12, players don't like it. Last week, the NCAA poll finally came out. It's 88% of the women, 77% of the men were against it. We had a player at one of the top schools do their own signature poll, and he had 1,347 signatures from men players against it. The players are overwhelmingly against it. The women coaches are overwhelmingly against it. Actually, the men, to be fair, the men D1 coaches are about 54 against something like that. It's about 50-50. But again, anything to this and that's because it's been promoted over and over and over, and the scare tactics have been just outrageous. This whole thing has been a ruse with these guys saying that they're going to shut down, you know, college tennis. Come on, give me a break. You think no ad's going to save it? Give me a break. That's stupid.
Now, help me on this, on the stat. For the life of me, I can't understand how the women are ahead of the men in terms of not what. Why is it that I'm reading stats that have the women, you know, disliking NOAB more than the men? What's going on
there? Well, JP, it makes sense. It makes sense. Look, women construct points more readily than men. Are they more into point construction or ball striking? Which one? Men are more into ball striking. These northern teams are ball striking emphasis, so NOAD favors them. Most of the women construct points. Coaches have to work on point constructions and patterns. They understand the importance of my pattern ultimately about 45 minutes to an hour from now will overcome your patterns. And it's critical if you ever coach women's tennis that you teach your young ladies the right patterns to use. They cannot, there's not, maybe Serena and nobody else, but there's no women's offense out there that can overcome women's defense. So therefore, patterns are very, very important. And in women's tennis, absolutely 80% of the women, and I think it's 82% of the women's coaches are absolutely against this. And we're not thinking through this. Number 14, I think it's just quite simplistic. So simplistic for them to say that this dumbed down, this abbreviation can save tennis. Now, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It's that simple. Look, if you want a TV format, go out and get one. You can have TV format for any sport you want, but do not dumb down our sport. And these guys have been defeated now four times. Twice by the NCAA cabinet, and they are just squeaking like nobody's business. They're just pushing it forward anyway. I mean, weren't they defeated twice now by the NCAA cabinet? Weren't they defeated 21-19 in a vote, a straight-out vote in 2013 NCAA down the ITA convention? Well, didn't they have 10,000 votes, JP, against what they were trying to do
they
by
did.
All tennis fans of change.org? How horrible that they continue to push this.
One of the biggest things that I can't figure out, and I like the guy, and, you know, I like him fine. I'm still trying to understand. Manuel Diaz was one of the front runners. He was actually pushing the petition around to everybody. And the next year he comes back, he's all for Noed again. So it boggles my mind. The doubles is over in 20 minutes. Let me ask you this: What is it that's giving them the courage to come back defeat after defeat? What is it that's giving them the incentive to come back, you know, and manipulate? What do they want, really?
Well, that's the, what, $64,000 question the old TV show used to be. That's the big question. And listen, let me say, first of all, every coach in America has their right to believe the way they want, and I have my right, you have your right, the coaches you mentioned have their rights. This should be on the table for debate. This should not be a mandate that is pushed down our throats by our coaches' organization. The ITA, everybody remember, they are a coaches' organization. They're a coaches' union. You have to pay $500 to be a member there if you want to. They basically want to be the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-powerful entity in college tennis. They are not. Each one of us work for our schools, and we work for our conferences, and we work for, you know, we have to abide by NCAA rules, and we're all in that. The coach ITA is a coaches' organization. End of story on that. They do not have the authority to jam this down our throats. Now, they basically have used scare tactics, and they have also used basically stories that, hey, we're going to lose this and we're going to lose that, and this is the way it's going to be. This train, how many times have I heard the train has already left the station on this? If I hear that any more time about these guys, it's unbelievable. But we have a duty, JP, to fight this. Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God, Thomas Jefferson said. You know, an unjust law is no law at all, St. Augustine says. JP, we have a right. We have a right, and we have a responsibility to fight this for the sanctity, the sacredness of our great game of tennis. If we don't do this fight now, JP, we will be looked down upon in all of history. What are we going to do next? We're going to come back and say, whoa, we made a mistake, let's go back. What are they going to do when this bombs? Do you think that the ITA and these people pushing this forward are going to take the blame for this? They will be nowhere to be found, and they're going to be saying, well, wow, this happened or that happened. It was too late. We could have saved it anyway. And it's just shameful. And in that all being said, I want to make this last point. If two-thirds of the coaches, men's and women's coaches, said, we got to do this, look, I just have to say, okay, that's what everybody wants. But they have not, in the 3 years they've been pushing this, in the 20-some years there has been an agenda to do this. We've never even had half of the coaches. We need two-thirds to change something like this. It's a rule of tennis. It's one of our most sacred heirlooms, and it's shameful to be even trying to do this. Let's honor the game and stay with
traditions. Well, I do on that. Now, let me see. I've got another caller that just pulled in here. Caller 202, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, caller 202. We've been on the radio here now with Coach Creasy. He's given us 14 reasons NOAD is a no-go. Do you have anything that you might be able to add or ask Coach?
Well, I would just like to just
you know, make one comment on it. It's basically just how I feel about it. Is with no at scoring, you never get to determine who is or was the best tennis player
day. Caller, hold on a second here. Coach Creasy, I think I recognize this voice. I think I recognize the voice. Is this Frank Salazar?
Frank Salazar. How are you, Coach?
Hey, Frank. Frank, I don't think. One of the best grinders. Wait a minute. One of the best grinders and point construction player. You know, with the way he would dissect players, it was beautiful. You know, and there it would take about an hour for the other guy to start grabbing his legs and his side. And then the guy would start bending over, and then the next 15 to 30 minutes, the guy would start spraying balls that Frank would play against.
Yeah,
Frank
you know,
was masterfully.
You know the mini battles you talked about? This was the king of – Frank was the king of destroying somebody. I mean, he would, you know, he would go deuce-ed. Maybe it might be the first game of the set or the first game of the match, and then you could just see the other guy crumble, couldn't you?
Yep, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Frank Salazar had a professional mind for tennis. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, Coach Salazar. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to, you know, all I was going to say is that, you know, you never get to determine who is or was the best tennis player that day because you never really get into the war zones of competing, and shortening matches doesn't really allow the player to really learn how or truly compete through adversity. And I think that holds a lot of truth if you want to go into play pro tennis.
Well, you know, guys, Coach Creasy and Coach Salazar, they're wanting, and I don't know if it'll happen, but they're wanting to shorten tennis all across the board. They want to shorten the pros, Frank. They're looking to try and I think in Australia, Coach Creasy, they did an exhibition with four games. They're doing no ad. They're doing all sorts of stuff. Isn't this the real – is this where the real push is coming from? It's coming from, you know, either the ITF or the USTA, and their ultimate goal is to, you know, a little bit like maybe Obama, he wanted to fundamentally change, you know, the country. They're wanting to fundamentally change tennis to a shorter commitment of time.
JB, let me just make this statement. Manipulation will never sustain those things of greatness that we want to push forward. We must be inspired to a much deeper level. Right now, all that we're seeing from these moves are manipulation. And once again, once they manipulate this and this goes away, where are they going to go from there?
Well, I appreciate everybody. It's late. I'm going to let you guys go. Coach Salazar, I appreciate you calling in. Coach Cervantes, Coach Walker, Coach Creasy. We got through the 14. If anybody needs to, I'd love for them to call in and listen. We got through the 14 reasons no ad is a no-go. I appreciate everybody calling in. Please pass on this show and pass on the next shows. We got a couple coming up, Chet Murphy and Cliff Ritchie. I can't wait to ask Cliff Ritchie what he thinks about no ad. This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show here on the Yellow Ball Tennis Network. And tune in to us. We're showing up at odd times now. Look for us on Facebook. Look for us on LinkedIn. Look for us on some of the social media, and you'll find one.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.